Hello and welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide essay speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve.
Over to you, Dasol. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone. So I'm a sexaholic. Really grateful to be here. Speaking doesn't come so naturally to me. I get very nervous, but the reason I do it is because in order to keep what I've been given, I have to give it away. And this is part of working my program. So the topic that I got was step one and rock bottom. So I'll share a little bit about my own experience with step one and hitting rock bottom. And then I guess just my own thoughts and understanding of the step. So when I came to SA, I don't have a very exciting story. my MOs are erotic literature, masturbation, fantasies. I was married to one guy, never had any extramarital affairs or anything like that. But I had been using lust, fantasies and masturbation since a very young age, pretty much as far back as I can remember myself. And that, you know, those were tools that helped me cope with life. My family was very, there was a lot going on. There was addiction in the family, and it was a bit of a volatile environment I grew up in. So lust basically helped me cope with life. It was, I guess, pretty much a gift at the time. The problem is that, you know, as I got older, it became more extreme, and I couldn't, it stopped helping me at a certain point. And I had been, after married in my early 20s, having a daughter, I'd become aware that there was addiction in my family, and I realized that I needed help. And I started attending other 12-step fellowship, which helped me over the years to deal with, you know, put my life in order. The thing is that after a while, what happened was my life was actually really great. My relationship with my husband improved a lot. You know, I was in school, I was doing well, but I was leading a double life because I felt like I was leading a double life because I was still using lust and I was escaping to lust. And there was this huge, I guess you could say, cognitive dissonance where, you know, I constantly needed, you know, the fantasies were getting worse. All the acting out behaviors were becoming more and more extreme. And I felt like I kept setting boundaries for myself. Okay, you know, so just these funny things where like, if it's just literature and it's not visual pornography, so then I'm not a sexaholic and it's not a problem. Like all these lies are that I was telling myself to believe that I was not powerless over lust. And I ended up just crossing, kept facing myself, main rock bottom that I had, where I ended up watching something that I'd never thought that I would. And I just really scared myself. And I knew that this was, I finally came to a place where I realized that I don't got this. I don't have control over this. This has control over me. And I knew that it was progressive. I knew that if I didn't seek help, that it was only going to go downhill. Yep. So I ended up going to SA. I participated in a different S fellowship at first, and it didn't work for me for various reasons. And I came to SA mainly because I knew that there was a group of women who, and And I didn't know of any other groups of women in other S fellowships. So I went to this SA group, and that was June 10th of 2020, and that's also my sobriety date. When I came to my first meeting of SA, I was done. And that was a huge gift. That was a huge gift because not a given that I would have been done at that point. And so the word, we say in step one, we admitted we were powerless over lust, that our lives had become unmanageable. I think there are a lot of words in this step that carry a lot of meaning. One is, the first word, it says we admitted we were powerless over lust. Admitting something implies that it's not something that I want to be honest about. It's something that I kind of want to avoid looking at. And in order to finally hit rock bottom, I have to admit that that I am powerless. For a very, very long time, I really, really struggled. Like, I really, really believed that I could control this part of my life. I could have my cake and eat it too. I could lust. I can enjoy lust. I can enjoy sexually acting out, and it wouldn't take over my life. But, it says in the big book on page 30, the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. And this was completely true for me in terms of lust, in terms of sex. I had this obsession with controlling my lust. And I had to get to a point where I had to be honest with myself and realize that I couldn't anymore, that this disease had power over me. So admitted we were powerless over lust. So the word lust, it's such an interesting word because I've heard many different definitions of what that word means from different members in Sexaholics Anonymous. And there was one member who said something that I really identified with. He said that for him, lust was the desire, the demand to possess and be possessed. And I felt that for me, that's very true. And I think actually, it's funny. I actually looked up the definition in Merriam-Webster because I was curious. And I think actually Merriam-Webster has a very, very good definition. One of the definitions is an intense longing, craving. It actually uses the word craving. And I think that's very, very accurate. The first time that I understood, or I felt that I understood what powerlessness over lust meant, I was at a meeting, and there was a member sharing there, and the topic of codependency came up. And I had had these extremely intense codependent relationships my entire life, specifically with authority figures. And so the topic of codependency came up, and I asked the speaker, do you think that one should go to, that it's a good idea to go to different meetings to deal with codependency, or that it can be worked on in this program, or it can be treated in this program. And he said something that, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember the exact wording, but he said something to the effect of codependency could be treated as lust, or is could be under the umbrella of lust. And I finally just understood what this meant. Because it wasn't just the sexually acting out, right? It wasn't just the sex. It was also relationships. It was going back to this idea of the desire to possess and to be possessed. At the core of my lust, I have this demand to be fulfilled by other people and to be fulfilled either sexually or even emotionally. And that is at the core of my powerlessness over lust. And it just permeates every area of my life. And so that's how I understand powerlessness over lust, and that's what I love about this program in particular, is because I really think there's a very deep understanding of what the core of our disease is. There's a reason that we don't say powerless over sex. It's not so much about the sex as it is about the lust, and I find that to be very, very true. And so at the end of step one, we say that our lives have become unmanageable. So, this can sound, it could be confusing, right? Because when I think of our lives could become unmanageable, I think of my life being an absolute mess. And some of us do come here and our lives are an absolute mess. The thing is, when I got to SA, my life wasn't a mess. My life was actually, I was doing great. Everything looked great from the outside. And my relationship with my husband was great. Like, all these things were going really well for me. But I think what unmanageability actually means and what it meant for me was that lust was taking over my life and it was driving my decisions. You know, whether that meant that I was less emotionally available for those around me, whether I was just preoccupied constantly. I wasn't present. I was constantly preoccupied with lust. And that was the unmanageability of my life, was that lust was making decisions for me instead of me being able to make decisions. And I think that's what the unmanageability means. And, you know, hearing members share from other fellowships, you know, when AA first started, so I think a lot of people who came were very low, what we call like very low bottom alcoholics. But then as the fellowship continued, you had people who were coming in, who were younger, whose lives hadn't fallen apart yet. And so I think, you know, we have to take a look at that and see the unmanned. Even if it's not about what my life necessarily looks like, it's how this disease affects me. So that's the unmanageability part. I wanted to talk a little bit about my personal experience, just actually relating to the Tradition 3. The Tradition 3 states the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. For the reason I relate this to step one is because I knew that SA existed before I came to SA. I knew about the 12 steps. But for a long time, I wasn't coming to, I was reluctant to come to because not enough. Like, I thought that in order to qualify for this program, that I had to have had extramarital affairs. I had to be watching pornography. Like, I had all these ideas, you know, of acting out. Then in order to qualify for this program, I had to have acted out in these ways. And a lot of our members have. And a lot of the women I knew who were sexaholics had acted out in these ways. And so I was part of the reason I was reluctant was because of this misunderstanding I had, again, going back to the unmanageability piece. And it's really interesting because a member actually said something to me a few days ago, and he said something to the effect of, you know, the reason I came to SA was because I followed someone else to the rooms. And I had to really go back and I felt very, very insecure about this and very, I guess, rattled. And I really had to go back to this idea of powerlessness and to this first step. And the truth is no one can actually tell me whether or not I'm a sexaholic. For a long time before I became, I remember like talking to people and saying, you know, am I addicted to sex? Am I not? Am I lust? And the truth is that, you know, even if my story isn't all that exciting, I'm still powerless over lust. I'm still powerless over lust. I still have temptations. When I am disturbed, I still get temptations to fantasize, to act out. That is my go-to. And so going back to, you know, Tradition 3 states, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. So I really just want to encourage anyone who's here, not sure if they're a sexaholic and if they're powerless over lust, you know, if anyone is comparing their story to someone else's story and things like, wow, like, you know, they did so much more than I did. Like, you know, I'm not that crazy. You know, if you feel that lust is running your life and you feel that your life is unmanageable because lust is driving you, then, and you want to become sexually sober, then that's you and you belong in these rooms. So I really wanted to stress that point also, which is if you want to be sexually sober, you belong in these rooms. I have a lot of gratitude. Today, I have a lot of gratitude whenever lust temptation comes up, because it reminds me that I'm a sexaholic and it reminds me that I have to go back to my first step. It keeps me humble to And I don't know if that's the right word, but it keeps me in check. Whenever I have a lust temptation, I realize, okay, I practice over lust. I am a sexaholic. And I have to go back to step one. Step one is also something that I use a lot in other areas of my life, because I'm not only powerless over lust. You know, we say further on in the steps, we say in step three, became willing to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And it's not just became willing to turn our lust. It's became willing to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. So that is because I'm powerless over many things in my life. And I can, even if I'm not today, I'm not necessarily obsessed with controlling my lust because I've admitted my powerlessness over lust, but I can be obsessed over controlling all sorts of other things in my life. I can be obsessed with controlling, you know, the way I look. I can be obsessed with the way with pride, the way I appear to my image. I can be obsessed with health, with my kids, anything. And I use step one in a lot of different areas in my life. I try to practice step one to remind myself that I'm not in charge of the results in my life. And that is something that in some ways can be more tricky, because I can say, okay, I know for me and for other people that I've spoken to in the program, you know, once we give up lust, it can be very tempting to try to replace lust with something else. And the truth is that I have, in order to get the gifts that this program has to offer, I need to admit my powerlessness over everything. I'm not responsible for results. I'm only responsible for my own actions and behavior. And God is responsible for the results in my life. I think that's it. I don't know how much time that was, but I think that's a good place to end. And I just want to thank you again for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.